rights and wrongful conviction lawyer who represented Muhammad Aziz and the family of Khalil Islam. And thank you to Abdurrahman Muhammad, independent scholar, historian, journalist, and activist who helped break open this case, didn't let it go for decades. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Currently accepting applications for a video news production fellowship and a people and culture manager. Learn more and apply at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. It's just about 6 o'clock, and that means it's time once again for another exciting edition of Off the Wall. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein over here, Kyle over
yonder.
There, yeah. Well, I don't know where to begin. It's been such a crazy week. Oh my goodness. I guess we can go sequentially. But let me just also say that I think we're feeling what a lot of people are feeling at this particular stage in history. Every time I turn on TV or radio, or listen to the media, listen to so-called journalists out there, I always get this this feeling of impending doom. You know, like, no matter what, it's really going to turn out badly. And, I'm referring to the upcoming midterms next week, a week from today. And, you know, you look around and you see, you know, are they trying to pick the worst possible candidates? You know, I mean, Herschel Walker, oh my God, this guy is a nightmare out of hell. Lee Zeldin, the guy is incompetent and does not care at all about the people he allegedly serves. Who is that crazy person in Arizona that just it reminds me of the evil villain in a science fiction film?
Carrie Lake.
Yeah, Carrie Lake. Let's hope I don't remember that name. Dr. Oz. The list just goes on and on of these awful, awful people. And yet, somehow, no matter how bad they are, it's either a tight race or they're even ahead. It makes absolutely no sense. Well, there's really only two scenarios I can think of where it does make sense. One, of course, is that we're not living in the country we thought we were living in, and we are riding a wave of fascism that is being welcomed by the people. There's that scenario. But then there's another scenario that's a bit more hopeful, and that's that the media is doing what the media always does, which is try and get the ratings, try and get the headlines, try and get people to panic. And what better way to do that than to tell them that it's all about to fall apart, that these evil people, and they are evil people, I'm not going to mince words, they are evil, evil, awful, terrible people, they are on the verge of taking control. All right, you know, and maybe that's what they're doing, shameful if they are, but better than the first scenario. But either way, either scenario, there's one thing that everyone needs to do, and that is vote. That is, get your asses out there and vote, whether it's early, whether it's by mail, whether it's on November 8th, a week from today. Go to vote.org. The website, vote.org, it'll tell you everything you need to know, no matter where you are in the country. You can even look up your own registration and figure out how to get out there and vote. If you don't do this, it's worse than if you disagree with me. You know, at least if you disagree with my conclusions, with the things we say on this show, you know, it's valid. You have a disagreement. Okay, I don't get it. I'd love to have a dialogue and try and figure out where we diverge, but at least you're participating, you know? And maybe I'm in fantasy land. Maybe the things I say make absolutely no sense. That's a whole lot better than a world where people just can't even be bothered to say anything. I think I'm more frustrated with people who don't respond than with people who respond with things I disagree with. And I believe the entire country is sort of feeling that right now. If people show up, I cannot stress this enough, if people show up to vote, then good people will win. Of that I have no doubt. If people show up, but if people don't show up, if you assume that your friends, your neighbors, your relatives are enough, and I don't care where you are in the country, I don't care how safe you think things are, if you make that assumption, that is the problem. That is the problem, because it has been borne out time and time again that when more people vote, then the good guys win. And when people stay at home, that's when this insanity takes hold under cloak of darkness. That is how it works. I've heard people in this state, in New York, say, well, Hochul's going to win. We all know that. So what's the point? I'll tell you what the point is. First of all, okay, I believe Hochul's going to win too, but I am getting increasingly worried. And one of the reasons is because I'm out here in Suffolk County, which has a real problem with embracing racists and Trumpism and things like that. And I see Zeldin signs everywhere, and they're putting them up on trees, on telephone poles, and they're ripping down the Hochul signs. There is no question about this, because every Hochul sign I see that's on public land is now gone and replaced by four or five Zeldin signs. This is how they operate. This is how these people work. And, okay, you know, even if that doesn't represent the majority of people in the state and Hochul wins, what does it say about all the other downstream races? You know, the races for representatives, the races for senators, the races for state and county representation. People are going to go out there, they're going to click off Zeldin, and then they're just going to go down the Republican line. And you're going to have races that your voice could have made a difference in that will simply be handed over to that side because of this Zeldin kick that people are on. He won't win, but others will as a result of them voting for him and everybody else down the line. You can prevent that. You can offset that if you disagree. But you have to show up. You have to participate. If you don't do that, even if you are in a comfortable state, your voice, your lack of a voice, will have made a difference. I don't know if that's something that you want to have on your conscience. You know, I've missed in my lifetime, maybe, you know, I can count them on one hand, the amount of elections, and it's including, you know, super off-season elections, and I've never felt good about it. Never felt good about missing this. And I know Kyle and I, we vote as often as is allowed, and you have a great system in the state of Washington where it's all by mail, so it doesn't matter where you are, you still get to participate, and that's something that, well, I think it's great, but you notice Republicans are very wary of that. They want to stop that. They want to prevent people from voting easily. They think every time somebody votes easily, they must be up to something. But what they're really afraid of are numbers. They're afraid of lots of people participating, because whenever that happens, they lose. Why don't we just remember that? You know, if we just remember that and stop with all the hand-wringing and, oh, my God, you know, what's wrong with us? We keep losing. I think we'd be in a much better position. We just have to have that confidence. We just have to have that that competence as well. Confidence and competence, they go together. And a lot can be done. But listening to all the naysayers, listening to all the pundits of gloom and doom, I don't think that's getting us anywhere. You need to get out there. Make sure people show up. Make sure people are aware of the issues. And we're going to talk about the issues a little bit. You know, name an issue, Kyle. What's one of the issues that Republicans are supposedly ahead on?
Income inequality.
Oh, no, wait a minute. They're for that. They're for income inequality. That's not, no, one of the things that their attack ads, you know, that you see every 5 minutes on TV, you know, one of those things. Name one of those issues.
I can't.
Oh, come on. Crime.
Okay. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Crime is one. The economy is another.
Yeah, big bad the city borders. And the scary borders.
Just pick one.
Immigration.
Immigration.
The buses can't get to the north fast enough.
Okay, you know, it's a complex issue. It requires a lot of discussion, but basically the country is founded on immigration. We all are immigrants in one way or another, whether it's one generation out, three generations out, whatever. We're all here, unless we're Native Americans, because we were let into this country, and we built something out of that. Now, we live in a society right now that is in dire need of more immigrants. And before you start panicking and you know, nailing your windows shut, what that means is more people to participate in the American dream, people who believe in the American dream. Does not matter what color their skin is. It really shouldn't matter what color their skin is or what their religion is. Do they believe in the American dream? And if the answer is yes, then why are we so afraid of them? You know? okay, they have to wait their turn. Okay, what exactly does that mean? Have you looked into what that means? Because if waiting your turn means you got to wait 25 years, it's not really that fair now, is it? You know, that's not what your relatives had to do. Why would we put such a huge regulation restriction on what these people are able to do? Look, we just came out of the pandemic. Some think we're still in the pandemic. Maybe we are, but we are still recovering. Okay, and everywhere I go, New York City, Long Island, wherever, the biggest complaint amongst employers is that they can't get people to work for them. This is restaurants, this is offices, you name it. But if you have people that are willing to work, and I think we do with all the people that want to immigrate to this country, does that not solve the problem? Does that not help rebuild the country? It's exactly what we need right now. All right? If you look at crime statistics with immigrants, it doesn't even register. Okay, you can point to isolated cases, but to say that immigrants are the ones committing most of the crimes, that's ignorant, it's racist, xenophobic, you name it, it's not true. All right. And finally, to counter your point, Kyle, immigration is not a Democrat-Republican thing. All right. Democrats have not thrown open the borders. I don't know where these false facts even come from. They simply are not building that ridiculous wall that Trump wanted to build. Is that the definition now of a border, is Trump's wall? I mean, really? No, that's not reality. We are still in a situation where immigrants to this country are subjected to being sent back because of COVID. We're still using that. We're still thinking that they're unclean and contagious. And so we're letting less immigrants in than we were before the pandemic. So the crisis, quote unquote crisis, isn't as much of a crisis as we're being led to believe. If it's a crisis, it's a crisis for the people trying to get here. And we should be a little bit compassionate about that. And we should also be looking at the situations that put them there in the first place. Many times, i.e. Afghanistan, things that we did that created the crisis in the first place. So, don't talk to me about immigration. You want another issue that Republicans keep bringing up as Democrats' fault?
I don't know. Do I?
I'm sorry for putting you on the spot like this. It bothers me because you see this all the time and it works. It really works because just today, Wall Street Journal put out some kind of a poll saying that because of inflation, Republicans now have the edge over, you know, the abortion issue. Okay, first of all, inflation, it's not the Democrats' fault. Inflation is a global thing. It's happening because of the pandemic, recovery from the pandemic, all the economic factors involved in restarting things and supplying and demand and all that. And there's this little war going on in Ukraine. You might have heard of it. All these things cause economic mayhem. Democrats didn't do that. So to somehow point to Democrats, and it's easy to do because the Democrats are in power, so anything that happens has to be their fault. Guarantee you, if Republicans were in power, the same thing would be happening. There might be some subtle differences, like perhaps we'd be on Putin's side instead of Zelensky's side, but the economy would still be in the crapper, all right? And it's not just us. Look at Canada. Look at the United Kingdom. Look at any country you want. And so many of them are in worse shape than we are. So, no, the economy, while it's a challenge, it's part of what economies do. You want to look at bad guys in this, look at the oil companies. I just heard about this today. And food companies. They are raking in massive profits, huge profits. Now, if there is a recession or inflation or economic crisis of one sort or another, we all have to tighten our belts and sacrifice. How come those companies don't have to do that? How come they're not at least just making the same amount they made before and adjusting prices so that, you know, they maintain that level of profit? Instead, they're benefiting tremendously from this, which tells me that we're paying for them. You know, we're not paying for the actual crisis. We're paying for them to have record profits and their shareholders can be happy. Those are the real culprits. And who do you think Republicans are defending? They're defending those people. They're defending the oil companies. Marjorie Taylor Greene, just a few minutes ago, tweeted that she wants to impeach Biden for threatening the oil companies. She said, her own words, she said this, for threatening the oil companies, he must be impeached. Come on, this is sick. This is what these people care about. They don't care about you. They care about these massive corporations. They care about the billionaires. They care about their own self-interest. It's utter nonsense. But it works on TV. It just, I keep seeing it all the time that it's the economy, and this new poll says that Republicans are ahead because of inflation. And it's great to pull at people's emotions, but when you look at the actual facts, doesn't add up. Doesn't add up at all. You know, you don't have to be on one side or another to reach that conclusion. You just look at the numbers and look at, you know, history and take away the hatred. And there's so much hatred out there. It doesn't matter what somebody that you hate does, because it's always going to be wrong. Now, like I said regarding the Wall Street Journal poll, inflation has now overtaken abortion as the main issue, apparently, according to that poll, which you can take with a grain of salt if you want. Abortion is one of these issues that isn't something that would happen either way with Democrats or Republicans. Abortion restrictions, making abortion illegal, that is 100% Republican. There's just no other way to look at it. It's completely a Republican thing. So while you can say that we'd be in a shaky economy with Republicans in charge or with Democrats in charge, we would not be in a country where abortion is about to be illegal if Democrats were in charge. And I don't mean in charge right now. I mean in charge when the Supreme Court was stacked. You know, when all these local races were decided where this kind of thing was allowed to happen. If Democrats win and they keep control of the House and the Senate and hopefully expand the Senate, then Roe versus Wade gets codified. It becomes the law of the land. If Republicans gain control, particularly of the Senate, that doesn't happen. And in fact, you know what does happen? No Supreme Court nominee, no matter the whole half of the Supreme Court could die, you know, next year. And Biden will not get a single vote because Republicans will block every single one. So don't tell me it doesn't make a difference. It makes a huge difference. It makes a huge difference. If things go as badly as the pundits insist on saying, then I won't recognize this place in a couple of weeks. I really won't. I don't think it's that bad. I don't think it has to be that bad. I think so many people are voting early. So many people are not responding to these polls. So many people are angry and motivated. And that's all it takes. But you can't just pass it off to the next guy. You can't just say, oh, it's going to be all right. No, it's not going to be all right. You don't get off your ass and do something, it's not going to be all right. And I'll sound very angry in 2 weeks, as opposed to now, where I'm relatively calm. Damn it.
This is a process. You got to participate, take an interest, and the more people that are looking at some of these candidates and their platforms and people that are backing them, the endorsements and information that they're providing from their campaign websites and so forth, all of that will gain more scrutiny as more people participate and lend their vote in the process of that. And it's just totally critical, because these seemingly mundane, less flashy elections are precisely the ones that help dictate the local and regional action and processes when it comes time for those larger elections. And I think have good reason to be vigilant, but I just hope the numbers are there. And yeah, however it goes, you just have to know that this is the process that that we have, and the alternative just is it's a lot messier than this.
Well, you know, the alternative may not involve elections at all. Look at the number of people who are running who have refused to commit to accepting the results if they don't win. Carrie Lake is one of them, you know, running for governor of Arizona. And there are many more as well. And if you will not accept the results of an election that you don't win, right away, that should be disqualifying. You know, I mean, aren't there questions you have to answer when you file for candidacy, like, are you a terrorist, or, you know, have you molested a child lately, or all sorts of, you know, questions that if you answer the wrong way, you're instantly disqualified. Well, I think one of those questions should be, will you accept the results of an election that you do not win? And, you know, it's really kind of shocking to see how many candidates on the Republican side invariably won't say yes, because they still hold on to this fiction that there is corruption, that the 2020 election was stolen, that Biden is not a legitimate president. It's all lies and fabrication, but they hold on to it, just like any cult member would do for the lies that have been proven over and over again. I don't think you can get through to these people. I don't think you can convince them through just mere logic. So you have to overwhelm them. You have to outnumber them. That is the only way. And we should stop trying to appeal to them. It's never going to happen. I hear people say, you know, these people out in the Midwest, they'll vote for, you know, anybody over a Democrat. So it must be something you Democrats are doing wrong. They're not buying what you're selling. That's not the problem. The problem is their minds have been twisted into hatred of anybody with a D in parentheses after their name. And that is where we need to point the attention, not micromanaging what Democrats are standing for, which, you know, is nothing particularly different or new than what Democrats have stood for in prior years and decades. This level of hatred is fairly new. I mean, it's always been there, but now it's been amplified by social media, amplified by a fascist president, amplified by simply encouraging people to get as outrageous as possible and to simply say the first thing that comes to their mind, regardless of whether or not it makes any sense, to make up facts and to realize it doesn't matter because nobody's going to check those facts anymore. That's the real issue. You know, a microcosm of this. Remember that whole Smithtown Library fiasco earlier this year? Basically, the board, the library board, I believe, they had this this vote, this sudden vote during Pride Month to take away all Pride material from the children's part of the library, saying it was inappropriate. Now, it was based on this misguided movement that we saw last year, where people were running for school boards all across the country because of this critical race theory fiasco or fiction that parents convinced themselves was being taught in schools, when it's not being taught in schools. Over and over again, this has been proven. This got a Republican governor elected in Virginia and resulted in all kinds of book bannings and other ways of clamping down throughout the country. Well, Smithtown was an example of this. And these people were elected to the school board, and they made their move in June of this year and tried to get all that material taken off the shelves, because children should not be exposed to books that have, say, two dads or, you know, anything like that. Any of the most minor things they were freaking out about. What they didn't count upon was the reaction. And we reported on that as it was happening here on this show in June. And I was very proud to see that happen. I was so proud to see people basically voice their opinion, get loud, and not back down. Within 2 days, they were forced to take a second vote and turn things around, put things back the way they were. And that was great. Now, there's a lot going on Twitter about this, and it certainly became one of the trending topics. A couple of weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, there was another election in Smithtown where three supporters of LGBTQ were running to replace those people who had done this on the Smithtown Library Board. They all won. Every last one of them won. Well, there's only three of them, but still, that's enough, and it's a powerful statement. And people in Smithtown really turned out. Getting word out about that proved next to impossible. You know, when I was talking on Twitter about the horrible things that they had done in the library, everybody was retweeting and amplifying it. When I tried to spread good news that, hey, look at this, we won. One like. Just one like is all I got. Nobody cared. Nobody wanted to talk about a victory. Nobody wanted to spread that news around. Wasn't reported. Wasn't amplified. Wasn't celebrated. This is our problem. We don't look to the victories enough. And that tells us there aren't victories. That we're always losing. Then we act like losers. No. We win an awful lot. Every time we get together and share a message, that's a win. You know, every time we stand up to oppression someplace or defend somebody, that's a win. And, you know, Republicans get this because they're celebrating every damn thing that happens and making themselves loud. You think there's more of them around than there are. I mean, you know, if I was a stranger to this area, I would be convinced that Zeldin was running against nobody. You know, that there was only one candidate for governor because those signs are every place, and everybody is talking about Zeldin because they're loud, they're boisterous, and they don't shut up. Well, the other side needs to do that too, and I think it's very, very easy to do that, and this goes throughout the entire country. You know, Democrats have to stop being apologetic for existing and unapologetic for standing up for what they believe in and defending themselves when they're accused of things that they bear no responsibility for. Look, crime is the other thing that almost every Republican candidate is pointing to, as if Democrats somehow make up crime. And all you have to do is look at statistics. Type it into Google, crime by state. You will see that the highest crime rates are in red states. You will see how much more dangerous cities in Florida are than cities in New York. But it never comes up when you're talking about Republicans who run places. Never. Because that's not on them. It's only on Democrats. It's only their fault. It makes no sense. But I think what people do is they just roll their eyes and say, oh, those Republicans are going off again. But what they fail to realize is that the words they say, even if they're complete nonsense, they stick. And people believe them. You know, and it doesn't have to make any sense. That's the lesson I've learned over the last few years, is that you don't have to make sense. You just have to get people to believe what you're saying. You don't have to show evidence, because no matter what evidence you show, you know, you can just say that, oh, that's made up, or this is part of the conspiracy, and it never goes away. And, you know, having grown up on IRC, I've learned how that works, you know, where basically people can say whatever they want, and as long as they say it enough times, in all caps, it sticks. You can never get away, you know, get rid of it. That's what our political system has become.
That the crime thing that irks me is that I think there was a period where there was a sense that of the public being punished for critiquing police activity. Yeah, people were protesting. People were critiquing how citizens were being abused by the police and calling attention to it en masse. And this sort of withdrawal from intervening and I think that was exploited even more by people who are set out to commit crimes and so forth, thinking, mm-hmm. Well, the cops aren't going to react. They're all mad that nobody cares, you know, that everybody's critiquing them. So they're not going to respond. They're just going to let crime run rampant so that they can sit and wait for everybody to come and beg them to do something and pay them more money and give them more weapons to abuse people with, et cetera, and stop critiquing them or having any kind of oversight.
Right.
That I don't think was pointed out enough. And then there was all of this, and instead what it was a lot of public critique of Democrats doing things that they weren't, but it was characterized as this extreme thing of, like, they don't want policing at all.
Okay, let me just
and
step
that
in. Go ahead. I'll finish your thought.
No, I'm done.
Okay, so you brought up defund the police, another thing that Democrats are labeled with by Republicans. If you went to any of those protests, George Floyd protests or police brutality protests, and ask the people in the crowd there, do you support the Democrats? Do you think they'd say yes? No, they'd say they're all the same.
Yeah.
They would say that without hesitation. There is no Democratic political candidate that those people would cheer for. Uh-uh, there isn't. It's not on them.
Well, the aspect of that I think parallels politics is trust. Like, there was a lack of trust in the police, and the same thing is lack of trust in politics. So, and a lot of believing characterizations about politics that are, I think, quite uninformed.
Right, right.
And that is, again, lack of education around civics and participation. People got to take an interest and take ownership of whatever it is, one or the other, or not being affiliated, but just being able to fill out and submit a ballot.
Look, I think what Democrats are guilty of is listening and considering and criticizing as well. Whereas Republicans are basically, you will obey the police, you will not question the police can do no wrong, until the police get in their way, in which case they'll beat the crap out of them, or they'll call for the FBI to be defunded because they dared to conduct a raid on Mar-a-Lago. They're phonies. They're just full of lies and contradictions,
so,
and just casting false blame on people that they don't agree with on other issues. And again, it works. It really works, and it's sad to see that.
And casting that mistrust alongside just a real flood of weapons and just the advocacy for manufacturers of these things made for a situation where the police departments were outgunned and by the kinds of crime they're facing as tensions and other strains made the brazenness and the activity levels increase and become ever more dangerous.
Outgunned by mass shootings and the weaponry that people have. And you better believe if you're a cop, you are not in favor of that. But you never get to hear those voices. You never get to hear those. They're not given a platform by Republicans. No way. I want to go over some of what happened over the last week, because we haven't even gotten into that yet. Right after the show, last week, we had the Zeldin Hochul debate. I thought she mopped the floor with him, but of course Republicans are saying, "Oh my God, he beat her soundly." I don't know. Anything stick in your mind? It wasn't really that eventful. I just thought she basically, stood up for the decisions she's made, and he basically was, how do I say this? A whiny little bitch. I'm sorry, there's really no other way to say it. I hope Trump doesn't get upset that I used how he's defined, but. You could both be whiny little bitches. That's just, nature of who they are.
I think she was just cool as a cucumber and laid it out there and refuted a lot of the silly accusations. And, Zeldin's just came off as really just high intensity and trying to outfox her or something or lay all these things at the Democrats' feet, and I think she gave a really good, at least succinct context to a lot of that, as far as where her political story fits into the current situation and what kinds of initiatives and priorities have been set so far. And I don't know, I I couldn't hear him. Not the way he wants to be heard.
I could not hear him. But basically, I got confidence from her and just annoying, buzzing insect from him. That's the best way I can phrase it.
Yeah, he had the eyes. It's just crazy eye. Like,
but
really.
This is interesting, though. Now, Hochul is our first female governor. But guess what, folks? We have not yet elected a female governor. It's just important to point that out, that the only reason she's in power is because Cuomo had to resign. And, you know, I was kind of doubtful at first. Well, not doubtful, but just I had to be convinced. And I think she's done a great job so far. I think she's stood up for the things that, that we expect her to stand up for. And doesn't seem to put up with any nonsense. And that's what we need. And in a week, New York State could make history and elect the first female governor. That would be nice. Break that glass ceiling.
Yeah, and emphasizing, like, her ability to work around the country as far as enhancing, like, business opportunities and employment opportunities in the state and other trade. Especially that relationship with the mayor, that being such a distinct thing for New York City and the state level, like working a lot more cooperatively than in the past. Like those kinds of things build trust. And yeah, I don't know.
It's funny, though, to hear Zeldin say the first thing he would do when he elected is remove somebody who was democratically elected because he doesn't agree with what he's doing. I believe the Manhattan District Attorney. You voted to overturn the election in 2020. Now this is what these people stand for. You don't get your way. You don't concede. You overturn. Thank God they don't have the military at their command.
Well, it's just everything's always wrong, and they got to come in and reconfigure it and twist it all around, and then it's heavy on promise, but you end up with something that's worse off or, like, kind of screwed up when people want to come back and have some oversight and see what actually went on. They never want any accountability. They never take responsibility. It's always somebody else's fault. I mean, who cares about you?
So right after that debate, we watched a second debate with John Fetterman and Dr. Oz. This is the one that everybody is saying was so painful to watch. And, it was difficult to watch, obviously, because John Fetterman is still recovering from the stroke he had in May. But what bothered me a lot more than his difficulty expressing himself was the way people reacted to that, referring specifically to media outlets like CNN, who basically, compiled all the times that he got something wrong or didn't express himself exactly the way they thought he should be able to. And that bugged me so much more than seeing his particular condition. Well, I was inspired by him. Because to be there, to be in that situation, and consider the situation, in this this high-pressure political race, you're in this room with your opponent who's attacking you at every possible time you take a breath. You have a set amount of time to answer a particular question, and then bells go off, and there's all these rules and all these people watching. I don't know anybody that would have performed much better than John Fetterman, and I include myself in that. When you're confronted with saying that in this year you said that you didn't support fracking, and now this year you say you do, how do you explain yourself? I guarantee you most people confronted with that would have the same amount of pausing that John Fetterman had being confronted with that.
Yeah, and another way that I saw that was if someone who had not had any kind of medical history or situation where they needed a special accommodation and you wanted to move on, you're a politician, you can't necessarily get into why or what, you don't have enough time to explain it, and you just said, I agree with this, and you want to move on, you left it at that.
Right.
That would be considered, avoiding maybe a long response, But it would be accepted that you just said you wanted to move on.
You
so
would have said,
made a position over several times, uh-huh. think it through, and you don't have an answer, a succinct answer, and you just want to move on. How did he not do that? Yeah, maybe it was a little bit more cumbersome.
Okay,
than
yeah,
thought.
That's a very good point because, you know, somebody who is perfectly able to communicate exactly the way they wanted to would have said would be something like, well, you know, regardless of what I said in the past, you know, I'd have to check what I actually meant when I said that. The important thing is moving forward, and I stand for fracking now, and I believe in fracking, and that is what I want to do. You know, basically, in the end, you would be in the same place, except it would have been a lot more slick the way that it was presented. So the way he presented it was more halting, and there were gaps and things like that, and we're all, oh, my God, he doesn't know what he's doing. Look. I know stroke victims, and I think many of us have had this in our lives in one way or another, and you can see if somebody is grasping a situation and simply not able to find the words or saying the wrong words, or if somebody has completely, you know, lost their mental facilities, or is it faculties? I think it's faculties, right? See, it's starting already with me. And basically, this is what I think people in the media failed to consider. They just see somebody who's having trouble expressing themselves and they're, oh, my God, this is awful. Then obviously Dr. Oz is more competent. Well, first of all, consider positions, which is what this is supposed to be all about. You know, Dr. Oz stands for terrible things and John Fetterman stands for things that more people accept, like, you know, abortion rights and, you know, all kinds of things that Democrats stand for. So right away, there you can't just say because Dr. Oz can express himself better that, okay, I'm going to vote for him instead, unless you don't care about any of those issues, you know? So right away, that's not true, all right? Dr. Oz said that political leaders should be involved in a woman's right to choose. Ridiculous things like that, all right? If you look past the difficulty that you have watching somebody trying to express themselves, and if you have that much difficulty, that's something you need to work on. You know, because people have all kinds of challenges and handicaps they have to deal with. But in Fetterman's case, there is nothing to suggest that he doesn't understand everything that he's hearing. And also with stroke victims, improvement is gradual. And if it ever got to the point where he wasn't able to do his job, well, then somebody would be appointed to replace him, and there'd be another election. And you'd have somebody in that period of time that stood up for what allegedly you believe in, if you vote for him. And isn't that better than simply giving up and saying, oh, you know what, he can't do it, let's let the other guy try it, even though I disagree with everything he says. You know, that debate really, it opened up my eyes to how far we have to go to listen, to accept people, to give people a chance. And the amount of courage that guy showed just to be there, just to agree to do that, that's incredible. I've seen interviews with him since then. I've seen him giving talks on the campaign trail. And he seems so much better than he did during that debate. I think it's the pressure of that. Like I said, anybody would feel that. So for him to expose himself like that, you know, to this kind of challenge, that's what we need. We need more courage like that.
You think if it was the other way around, if Oz, Dr. Oz, had a impairment like that, would he have stepped up and debated? And would we be as critical? Mm-hmm. You know, or would there be a wealth of sympathy and understanding and accommodation to hear him out and give him a chance? And would we not want the same, that his platform, and if he was choosing, in a big if, mm-hmm. choosing to continue in a race like that after having some kind of medical change, what prospect, what judgment would be appropriate then? And I don't know, I think right. That's the most you can ask for in this moment. And like you said, it takes a lot of bravery.
Two things struck me about Oz's performance. Basically, he treated Fetterman as if there was nothing wrong with Fetterman, which you can say is a good thing. But it's also kind of a jerky thing to do because he talked extra fast and obviously knew that it was going to be hard for Fetterman to keep up, for the closed captioning to keep up. So I think he was trying to make it seem like, oh, what's the problem here? Do you not understand me? Well, maybe you're not able to do this then. You know, basically planting that idea in people's heads. I think he knew exactly what he was doing. We have to move on to just a couple other things. The attack on Nancy Pelosi's husband. Oh, my God, this – we could spend the whole hour on this. But basically, this crazy guy broke into Pelosi's house in San Francisco, breaking a window with a hammer and basically holding Nancy Pelosi's husband hostage. She was in Washington. The intruder said he wanted to wait for Nancy. You couldn't get more MAGA than this guy. Basically, he believed all the conspiracy theories, you know, the COVID, the election, everything. And fortunately, Paul Pelosi was able to call the police, like trick the guy into letting him go to the bathroom where the phone was, call the police and have this kind of conversation with the intruder that let the cops know the craziness that was going on. They show up, and when they show up, that's when the guy attacked Pelosi with a hammer and put him in the hospital. That is bad enough, but the Republican reaction to this is absolutely sickening. I mean, at first, I thought it was going to be okay. I thought people were actually going to condemn this. It looked like the more sane people were doing that. But then something happened. Something happened, and they started spreading yet another conspiracy saying, yeah, this was actually some gay lover's spat, okay? And this, like, 40-year-old guy came to the house of this 82-year-old guy, and they had, some kind of argument. Just utter nonsense. I'm not even going to repeat it, because if you read the police report, which was released yesterday, everything is explained. Everything is, you know, the crazy situation. It makes sense how things played out, how he was able to make the phone call, how he was able to trick them. Yet what we are seeing through today, Trump today even amplified it by claiming that that this wasn't what's being reported by the police. Elon Musk, new owner of Twitter, amplified it yesterday. This is sickness. These people don't know how to stop, no matter what happens. We were joking about it, you know, shortly after it happened. I mean, you know, all due respect to what was going on, but we were saying, you know, they're probably going to make a conspiracy about this. We were basically racking our brains trying to make it as crazy as possible. This is crazier. They did a better job than we could trying to be crazy. I mean, how do you deal with people like this? You just can't reason with them. And yet, we're on the verge of putting these kind of people in power. America, I am shaking you by your shoulders right now. Wake up. I'm smacking you across the face. Don't let this happen. Please, don't let this happen.
Yeah, and prove this sort of this misunderstanding that people have, this belief that Democrats will just put up with anything. They'll just take it. They'll just accept this.
I don't think they will. I don't think they're accepting this.
I think there's a lot of Democrats that have some news about that.
Yeah, this is over the line by far. And just, there are congressmen out there. There are so many candidates out there joking about this, insulting the Pelosis even more, saying, okay, well, we're going to send Nancy home to him. It's just disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. You don't do that. You know... This guy is one step short of being treated as a hero. That is the country we are in right now, where someone can attack an octogenarian inside their home, and somehow the victim is being blamed because they're on a different political platform or related to somebody with a different political ideology than you. That's not the country I want to live in. Is that the country you want to live in? Because if it is, then okay, you vote for those people. Otherwise, let's give them a swift kick in the ass and prevent this from happening in the future as well. Because this sends a signal. You know, year by year, it gets worse and worse. 5 years ago, I don't think we would have considered this to be possible. But now, yeah, you know, anything goes. Can't have it. Can't have it. Hey, in Brazil, they kicked the fascist guy out. They kicked Bolsonaro out yesterday. Was it yesterday? Was it the day before yesterday?
Yes.
The day before yesterday. Sunday. Because that's when sane countries have their elections, is on Sunday. Yeah, so by a pretty thin margin, but a significant margin nonetheless, Bolsonaro was given his walking papers, and guess what? He has yet to concede. In fact, he's going to commit to a transition of power, according to today's reports, but he will not concede. Look, again, if you support somebody who won't accept the results of an election that they lose, that is not the right person to support, regardless. And that has to be the case globally. There could still be some bad things that happen as a result of this. There could be a military coup. And if you think that we are immune from that kind of a thing, think about how far down we've fallen in the last few years. It could happen anywhere, unless citizens are vigilant. So good news, you know, Bolsonaro's gone, or will be gone, by the end of the year. But we're not in the same world we were. And the bad guys keep clinging to power and getting worse and worse and crazier. So people, please, get out there and vote. Vote.org, check your status. You have a week. You can probably vote now. If not, next Tuesday. But don't expect others to take care of it for you. It's in your hands. I'm giving you the closing words, Kyle.
Wow. I just say, do the right thing, everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And take care of one another.
Do you remember to mail your ballot?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Ask people around you if they are mailing in, if they remember to mail the ballots. You know, it's important. Okay. OTW@2600.com is our email address. And next week ought to be interesting. We probably won't know much next week, but in 2 weeks we certainly will. And hopefully that'll be a cheery show, but it might not be. All right, stay tuned for Finn. We will see you in 7 days' time. Good night.
Silhouettes and shadows. Watch the revolution. No more three steps to heaven. Just walkie-talkie. Heaven or heart. Just big heads and drums. Full speed and pagan. And it's no game. Understand the situation. So where's the moral? People have their fingers broken to be insulted by these fascists is so degrading. And it's no game. So much scarier. and round the world. Put camelish on the walls. They're making carpets and treadmills of garbage sorting. And it's no better.